Do you want to spend more time in God's Word, but your tight schedule doesn't permit you to sit down with your Bible? Do you sometimes find the Bible confusing? Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, a daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study with the church, past and present. You can listen and study anytime, anywhere, on your commute, at the gym, or while doing housework. Learn more at thewordendures.org. TheWordEndures.org.
You're magic, like me.
I need you to listen to me. The world's a hungry place. A dark place.
Hi there.
I only met two or three people like us. They died. When I was a kid, I bumped into these things. I don't know about magic. I always called it The Shining.
That's a clip from the trailer for the movie Dr. Sleep. It is the sequel to the horror classic The Shining from Stephen King. How does it stack up to its predecessor and to the book upon which it is based? Does it actually deliver the promise of a scary time at the theater? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkham. We'll be reviewing the movie Dr. Sleep. Pastor Ted Geese joins us on this Thursday afternoon. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Stephen King is the author of both The Shining and Dr. Sleep. Dr. Sleep, the movie, is the sequel to The Shining. Stephen King was pretty vocal about his dislike for Kubrick's version of The Shining, but he has endorsed Dr. Sleep. Why do you think that is?
There's a couple of reasons. I think there's a cynical reason and then there's a speculative reason. So I guess, like, The Shining, you might remember the movie, and you probably remember the book. The family, the Torrance family, drives this yellow Volkswagen Beetle. Well, Kubrick, in the first like 10 minutes of the movie, basically has them drive past a broken down Volkswagen, you know, yellow Beetle on the way up to the Overlook, and basically tells the audience and Stephen King, we're not doing it the way your book was set up. It was like a little tip of the hat. So I think that there was just enough changes to the book back then that he didn't like it. He didn't like how Kubrick dealt with the story. So I would say that there was personal reasons. I think he likes this director, Flanagan, a lot better, Mike Flanagan. You know, just they have a better relationship, working relationship. So that's probably why he's endorsing it. He probably is okay with some of the changes they've made, and they've made changes. But the cynical answer is that Stephen King is going through a bit of a renaissance of projects going on. So right now, there's the Stand is being turned into a TV series. They've announced The Tommyknockers, The Talisman, The Institute, Sleeping Beauties, Pray for Us, Doorway, and Cujo is all announced to be projects that they're working on, you know. There's a pile of things in the hopper. So he needs to be a bit of a cheerleader for his own stuff because there's just so much going on. There's even second season of Castle Rock on TV right now. So I think that maybe is a cynical answer. Like he can, you know, be like that. Like on Twitter, he'll say, I love this. And maybe it's because he just wants to keep everything kind of ebullient or going along.
So this is not what many Shining fans expected by way of a sequel. It has Danny Torrance. It has that idea of The Shining written right through it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a whole different direction in terms of kind of the bad guys that occupy this portion of Stephen King's universe. What's the general plot here?
The general plot, like in the Shining, it was all like personal demons, like problems that individuals had, and then also like kind of ghosts, like in a haunted hotel. So there's elements of that in this Dr. Sleep, but then you also have this group called the True Knot, and they're kind of like sort of like gypsy slash psychic vampires, and they're led by a lady called Rose the Hat, and played in the film by Rebecca Ferguson. And this group of gypsies like wander around North America in RVs, generally tried to blend in, but to survive, they need something that they call steam, which is a kind of like a psychic mist that comes off of people with The Shining. If they torture them, it comes out, and if they die, it comes out. So they collect this and eat this as their food, which is pretty dark and horrible stuff. And you strip that the supernatural kind of faux misty stuff out of the scenario, and you do have people in this world who do horrible, heinous things to children, and it has a spiritual component of it. So essentially, Stephen King is kind of like drawing some of that stuff from our real world into these characters in his kind of supernatural gypsy kind of villains that he puts into Dr. Sleep.
Does he follow the book, or does the filmmaker here follow the book in at least a satisfactory way? They always want to tweak King, but how many changes do they make that are substantial from the plot of the book?
Okay, so the general plot of the book is Danny Torrance, the little kid, is now Dan Torrance. He's grown up. He's a recovering alcoholic. He has a psychic connection with this little girl, Abra, who's just discovering kind of like the extent and the power of the Shining that she has. And they have to deal with the True Knot, because the True Knot have noticed this girl and look at her like, you know, the white whale kind of from Moby Dick, and they want to get her and then collect all that steam for themselves so they can eat it. And, you know, and then they have to deal with that. That is the general plot of the book. And it's the general plot of the film. Now, you've read the book, and some of our listeners will have read it, and I listened to it as an audiobook, actually, in advance of us getting together to talk today, in advance of watching the film. And they make some significant changes. One of the main changes that they make that I thought was significant is that through the course of the book, and hey, spoilers, folks, during the course of the book, it's discovered that Dan Torrance, who the girl Abra often refers to as Uncle Dan, is actually really her uncle. That his father, Jack Torrance from The Shining, had a drunken, adulterous relation with a lady that produced a half-sister. And the half-sister is the mother of this girl Abra, kind of short for abracadabra, because it's kind of just a funny little name. But at any rate, that actual family relationship is not part of this film. And I think that that's a major problem in the movie, actually, because it takes away some of the motivations for the characters, and also like some of the fears that people might be able to identify with when it comes to this kind of a story. Particularly, you know, the fear that, like, Dan Torrance's fear is that he's going to be like his father, Jack. And now he has this additional fear that his niece could end up like his father, Jack, right? So that's a kind of a real world fear that people have about family members if there's been real problems in a family. And that's part of the book. And I think it's something lacking in this film when you take that part out. There are lots of other changes, but essentially the reason why a bunch of these things are out is because Flanagan is streamlining the story. So he's like removing entire characters and taking a couple characters and kind of like mushing them together in some ways. So he does that because it shortens the length of the story. The book's over 500 pages. The movie's 2.5 hours long. You know, it could be serviced better by having it be a 10-part series or a 5-part hour long series or something like that. But this is what you get.
So in the Shining, The Shining itself is presented as kind of a positive thing. It's a way that Danny Torrance, as a little kid, is not only able to witness the supernatural goings-on in the Overlook Hotel, but he's also able to communicate with maybe the previous caretaker or something like that. But it's viewed as a good thing. In this one, there's a real dark side to that supernatural ability, isn't there?
At the very least, it's neutral. And then a person, depending off their depending on if they have good or bad intentions. It's more like an ability. So you could use it in a positive way or you could use it in a negative way. And one of the things that they do, I think, is they really contrast, and Flanagan does this great job of contrasting the difference between Dan Torrance and a character like Rose the Hat. So the True Knot, they presumably they're on the same sort of spectrum. They can do some of the same things that other people with The Shining could do, like suggest things to people and they do it, or clairvoyance, or all of these kinds of supernatural stuff. But, you know, like the way they contrast this is that they'll have Dan Torrance he works as a orderly in a hospice. So they have him at people's bedside and he'll be helping them mitigate and navigate dying. But he does it in a very kind way. He talks to them. He reassures them. He's very kind with them. The flip side of that with the True Knot is they actually are shown while people are dying, but they're tormenting them, causing them extra pain so that they can feed off of them. So here you have, like, they're both there at somebody's death, but the one is using their ability in a good way. The other one's using it in a bad way. So at the very least, I guess the idea of The Shining is neutral, and it depends on who's using it and why.
We're reviewing the movie Dr. Sleep with Pastor Ted Geese. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Heath Curtis will be speaking at a stewardship conference Friday, December the 6th and Saturday, December the 7th in Toledo, Ohio. You can learn more at lcms.org/stewardship. More Than Giving, December 6th and 7th in Toledo, lcms.org/stewardship. I remember reading the book Dr. Sleep and wondering how you deal with the villains in this. Really a band of aging RV enthusiasts dressed in thrift store clothing. We'll find out how it works on film after this. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? If you enjoy our hymn studies, be sure to check out the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Praise and Honor, Hymn-Inspired Devotions. Praise and Honor contains a devotional for each stanza from hymns like God's Own Child, I Gladly Say It, Rock of Ages, Cleft for Me, We Praise and Acknowledge You, O God, and more. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Praise and Honor, Hymn-Inspired Devotions.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union is committed to serving you and to serving the church. Lutheran FCU serves you by offering mortgage and auto loans, checking and savings accounts, credit and debit cards. Lutheran FCU serves the church through its Ministry of the Month program, October's recipient, the National Lutheran Cross Country Championship. Learn more at lutheranfcu.org. Good for you, good for the church. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. LutheranFCU.org.
Casting Christ's net on the internet. You're listening to Issues Etc.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.
Why do the Lutheran confessions quote the ancient church fathers? Find out in Pastor Will Whedon's column, Why We Bother with the Fathers, in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Professor Adam Kuntz details his journey from the Book of Common Prayer to the Book of Concord. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie Dr. Sleep. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. Ted, when I read the book, the one question kept rolling around in my head, thinking this is going to be a movie someday, was How scary will a roving band of RV enthusiasts dressed in thrift store clothing be on film? How do the villains come across?
I knew that that was what was I was going to get when I went into the book. And I knew that that was what I was going to get when I went into the movie. And when I was going through the book, listening to it, then they start to describe Rose the Hat. And there's this moment, a number of them through the book, where Abra sees her for who she is. And she has this kind of like smile that keeps getting bigger and bigger. And then it's this black maw, this huge mouth with like one walrus-like tusk in it, one tooth. And just the contrast between this very beautiful, like gorgeous, the most beautiful woman in the world, it says at some points, face, and this horrible mouth, I thought, well, there's your iconic, evil, frightening image that you could use to scare a generation of people who go to this movie. And they don't do it. It's not in there. It's not in there, not even once. And it's not even in there like, oh, it was just a dream and I was thinking that they were like that. It's just not in there. And to me, I thought that this was a kind of egregious absence because, like you're saying, you know, like you have to really establish that these are evil villains. And while they have this scene where this boy is abducted, tortured, and killed, that helps establish it. But in terms of them being like a real supernatural evil threat and truly being a complete, total, realized villain, I think that's a piece of the puzzle that's missing. And maybe they just couldn't figure out how to do it and not make it look weird or not quite right. I don't know. Maybe they abandoned it at some point. But I thought that was missing. And I thought that that was a real unfortunate thing because it's almost like Flanagan just doesn't let them be completely... Like, there's a little bit of sympathy for these characters. It's mostly eroded. That would push it over the edge, and you'd be like, I'm not sympathetic towards these characters of the true knot and, like, these gypsies. So that's where I feel like he missed the boat on that because it should have, like, in the mind of the viewer who watching it, like, you don't really want a lot of sympathy for people who abduct children, torture, and murder them. Like, you don't want to be building that into your story. So you should be pretty, like, I would hope that it would be clear that these are not good people and that actual people who do these kinds of things are also certainly evil, if that answers your question.
Is that theme of, and King likes to do this, he likes to throw the children in there. He taught out the toddler to make it unbearably uncomfortable to read his books. He said in Pet Sematary he thought he crossed the line. But does the abduction and the murder of a child, does it cross the line? Or would it for many viewers of this film?
Sure. I mean, that is clearly like the most unpleasant thing in this whole entire movie. And you can, like, when you're reading a book, you can mute that to a certain degree, right? Like, in the theater, you have to, like, look away or something. Like, you're like, this is not, it's not supposed to be enjoyable, clearly, and it's supposed to be disturbing. And it's interesting that horror films will make you, a person, a viewer, really actually stop and think about how horrible something is. Like, a lot of times people go through their lives and they just kind of like brush all that stuff away or flip the channel or whatever, scroll past a bad story. Sometimes horror films do have the capacity of making you actually just think about it and ponder it a little bit more.
If I recall in the book, there's also kind of a murder mystery element where they are searching for the grave of one of these abducted children. Does that make it into the plot?
Yeah, this is the boy that we're talking about here is that referred to as Baseball Boy, and they do have to go to Iowa to like dig up, you know, his shallow grave and find a baseball mitt that then Abra uses to like figure out where these gypsies are somewhere in North America so that they can kind of deal with them. This is part of the story, and it does show up in the film. And they do, when they do discover the boy, when they dig up his body, the way that it is presented is very visceral, and it's the kind of response like that you, like, they don't brush past it. It like they spend a little bit of time dealing with that, and I think that that's actually positive, just, you know, portrayal that Flanagan puts in there. Like, there's real grief and shock and trauma at finding this poor kid.
In the book, The Great Showdown, kind of the boss encounter of the film takes place back at the Overlook. How does the film deal with that?
Well, in the book, it establishes that the Overlook had been actually burnt down, that the boiler blew and the place burnt down. So there isn't actually a hotel there anymore. But what Flanagan's doing is he's like dovetailing the Kubrick film with the King sequel book. So the Overlook Hotel is there, and they utilize some of the characters and things. Like, that's really where it goes off script, because in the book, Abra's not even actually present there. She's back in New Hampshire, and she's projecting herself there from a distance, and there's a bit of a ruse that's going on. Dan Torrance is there, and he's facing Rose the Hat, and so is Abra, but from a distance. With this, Abra is there, and the house is, like, the big hotel is there, and a lot of the characters previously from the other, like the Kubrick version of the film and The Shining book, are there as well, like the lady in the bathtub and all of these cadre of characters, they show up. So it's a different, the conclusion is not as the book has it.
Is it a bad adaptation?
You know, it's, as an adaptation, it's better, it's slightly better than middle of the road. I mean, I would say like a B minus, you know, if we were going to give it a letter grade. C plus, B minus. It's not the worst Stephen King adaptation. It's not the best, that's for sure.
Are there any of those Easter eggs that the true King fans are looking for that kind of say, ah, we know who you are, we know that you know a little more about the universe that Stephen King has created over the last five decades?
Yeah, I mean, there's some things. Like, one thing is just the geography of King. He has these fictional towns that he puts all of these things in and his stories in. And at one point later on in the film, you know, you hear somebody talk about Castle Rock, which is another town that books happen in for Stephen King, that's near apparently this town in New Hampshire. So it's they have some of that stuff in there. And I think that a lot of it, though, is the fan service in this film is to bring back some of those things from the Kubrick film and try to, like, pull that stuff together. That's part of what they got going on.
Ted, I'm curious, in your review, Mark 7, 20 through 23 was brought to mind. You actually quoted it. How does that figure into your thoughts on this film?
Well, I mean, the thing about Stephen King is that the evil that the characters deal with can just as easily come from inside a character as it can come from outside. So you might have, like, the True Knot coming to track you down and abduct you and try to torture and murder you. But there are lots of characters in the film that are dealing with their own past and their own ghosts and their own issues and problems that they're dealing with. And for instance, Dan Torrance is dealing with alcoholism, and, you know, he's in a 12-step program and he's dealing with that. But that passage from the Gospel of Mark is the one where Jesus talks about how what comes out of a person is what defiles him. For within, out of the heart of a man comes evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person. And I think that if you sat down with Stephen King and you really talked with him about human nature, which I think he's a very good observer of, I think he would be in full agreement with Jesus on that, because he really takes the time to look at the interior world and life of people. And sometimes that is the ugliness of sin, and he gets that. And that comes across in the film along the way too, which I think is kind of an interesting thing when you consider Stephen King and his books and the adaptations of the film. If they're getting that, they're getting Stephen King. And this director, Flanagan, he also had done Stephen King's adaptation of Gerald's Game. And then he also did The Haunting of Hill House, which was on Netflix, as well. And that was one where it took really took the time to get into the psychology of the characters and their internal lives and their heart. And that was The Haunting of Hill House was something that actually influenced Stephen King's writing of The Shining, which then Dr. Sleep is a sequel to.
Finally, what are your pastoral concerns about the content? This is a horror film, and it's a horror film that deals with things that not only never happen, like vampire gypsies, but it also deals with things that do actually happen in our fallen world.
Yeah, I mean, like I often say, you know, film watching is voluntary. Some people are going to go see this. Not everybody goes to horror films or reads Stephen King novels even. And it is rated R. And when you look up the, and I always, like, I would recommend people look up the MPAA rating. And I realize it's not always perfect, but it says rated R for disturbing and violent content. Very true. Some bloody images, yes. Language, it has that. Nudity and drug use. Well, the nudity is really the lady from the bathtub. It's not intended to titillate. It's intended to be horrific. And I think you see, like, Ewan McGregor, who plays Dan Torrance's butt at one point. But, I mean, it is an R-rated movie. In Canada, it's rated 14A. So it's not the most violent and bloody of movies. And it doesn't really revolve around, like, jump scares, like a lot of horror films do. It's a really a slow burn. It's more about the psychology of the characters, and it takes its time. So it's I don't think that there's anything in there that's going to cause people to like stay up at night, except for that the stuff about the kids. It's just horrible stuff. So that's my advice about that, is that it's not going to be for everybody, clearly.
So it doesn't sound like it was for a horror film that scary.
I've seen scarier, like ones that actually, you know, would stick with me. I think that the ideas behind some of this stuff is the stuff that you're going to, like when it talks about like the abduction of kids and stuff, like that's the stuff that, you know, might think back on, you know, in terms of this film. But otherwise, I mean, it's not Stephen King's scariest stuff, that's for sure.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. You can find a link to his movie reviews on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church and Missouri Synod, about pastors and visiting their people. It's This Week in Pop Christianity with Chris Rosebro. We'll respond to your email and the Issues Etc. comment line, and we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you concerned that nativity scenes aren't being displayed in public places? Why not display one at your church or your home? The Outdoor Nativity Store produces durable, affordable, and American-made outdoor nativities for Christians around the world. To view a variety of nativity sets, visit OutdoorNativityStore.com. These nativities will hold up under the harshest weather conditions, snow, ice, and wind. The Outdoor Nativity Store. OutdoorNativityStore.com.
You're invited to an open house Sunday afternoon, November the 17th, at the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis, St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. The open house includes a presentation by Jocelyn Benson of Wittenberg Academy titled, Why Settle for Good Enough? You also have an opportunity to visit the school and meet our teachers. Find out if St. Paul Lutheran School is the right place for your family. Join us for an open house Sunday afternoon at 1, November the 17th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.